From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 574, Cloud Security with guest Paul Keeley, recorded Tuesday, February 13th, 2018. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon, and thank you for listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell, here with Paul Keeley, who has been a Microsoft MVP since 2010 for System Center Operations Manager in the early days and co-authored the book Mastering SCOM 2012. Today, he is an Azure MVP and the co-founder of Born in the Cloud, a Microsoft-managed gold partner in the cloud and enterprise management systems. His latest book, Microsoft Cloud at the C-Level, is designed to help people understand the cloud security stack of Azure and Office 365 Enterprise. He focuses on helping customers secure their administration workstations, Office 365, and Azure. Welcome, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And I appreciate you throwing that little bit about securing admin workstations, because that seems to be the attack vector these days, isn't it? It's like the mistakes that our administrators make.
It's the simplest place.
Yeah.
You know, like when I talk to people, so one of my customers right now got breached last year. Badly breached. And before this, I had always viewed an IT attack as, you know, you get hacked and it's a technical thing.
Right.
And I didn't realize that it's actually a criminal thing till I, you know, till the FBI came in and were interviewing the people I was working with.
Interesting. That's got to be an experience.
Oh, man. You know, I mean, you know, the story about how they finally got Lance Armstrong, where fellow cyclists come in and they sit at a desk and someone goes, oh, I'm so sorry, my handgun makes it really uncomfortable, and they stick a gun on the table with their FBI badge and say, you know, hey, Buster, it's kind of got a bit serious now.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but they drop their badge and their gun on the table to start the conversation.
Yeah, to say, I mean, one of the big four, I'm not going to name them, but one of the biggest accountancy companies in the world, whose Office 365 just got hacked, it turned out that one of their global admins switched off MFA so that his attack could be compromised so that they could get in.
So it was an inside job.
Absolutely an inside job.
Wow, that's really interesting. And it's interesting to think in terms of, this is no longer kids with runaway worms. This is professional thieves. This is a criminal enterprise that is using cybersecurity exploits to breach systems for profit.
100%. So when I start off, like lots of times, I spend most of my working time is spent in what used to be the old Microsoft Mid-Atlantic region, which isn't called Mid-Atlantic anymore.
No.
But I basically land in DC and I work between DC, Philly, Baltimore, you know, just up to New York, just that kind of sliver.
Right.
And so I'm there telling people and explaining to people what the Microsoft security stack is. And I start off with the intelligent security graph. And I've been trying to come up with an analogy for a long time about the intelligent security graph, because essentially it's a form of Skynet. I mean, it's just an insane thing that can only be around because of the cloud.
Right.
For people who don't know what the intelligent security graph is, it's Microsoft taking data from 200 cloud services. One cloud services is Azure, one is Office 365, one is Windows Update. So just imagine how big those cloud services are.
Sure.
I mean, phenomenal. So they're pulling data from these points and they're pulling it into huge data sets, into enormous data lakes. And then they're going at these data lakes and they're looking for anomalies. And if the anomalies are big enough, they are then able to react in real time, as in like in seconds, and do things like challenge and authentication.
So they may have gotten through, they're already in, but you're now saying that doesn't look quite right. Let's the next thing they click on, ask them for a new authenticator.
So I have been given demos. When I didn't fully understand the stack, I used to be in the States giving demos, and my PC would be logged on at home in France where I live. And my wife would come down and check something. And then what would happen is I would be, you know, logged in with the same account in both locations. And, you know, it's an impossible distance travel.
Right.
And within about a minute or two, I'd have problems opening the portal. And then suddenly I'd be asked to MFA.
Right, right. Yeah.
And all that's happened is Azure Identity Protection has seen that there's a sign-in risk rather than a user risk, and I'm being challenged. And when I would start off explaining this to people, I'd say, you know, so, you know, Microsoft are pulling data from throughout the world and taking live data sets and giving you information on the spot. And people would say, ah, oh, yeah, but that's exactly what Symantec do. You know, Symantec do that for our local antivirus client and our mail filtering. And I was like, yeah, but it's different. And they were like, how? And so then the analogy that I came up with is it's kind of like you're at the beach and you've lost your kid. I have two kids. We go to the beach. I lose them pretty regularly. So, you know, you get this thing of where are my kids? And a lifeguard sitting up on a, you know, high chair, he has a really good view of the beach and he can see the 4-year-old crying and the parent running and they can shout at you and say they're over there.
Right.
And to me, that's what most of the other vendors are like. They are sitting up on a high chair and they have this view. You know, so like the Mayo people and the local antivirus people, they have the view of the Mayo coming in and antivirus flashing on your desktop. And my analogy is that Microsoft and the intelligence security graph are like a drone because they're so further up the picture because they're pulling information from things like Xbox Live, from things like Windows Update, from their literally billions of Azure Active Directory sign-ins and Office 365 authentications. And they're feeding so much more data points in that two data points are email threat and antivirus threat on the machine. But then there's a ton of other data points. So I was recently doing a test for Windows Defender ATP, which is hands down, the best security tool Microsoft have ever come up with. Huh. Anybody who hasn't used it, just go and deploy it. It's amazing. And in the test, it's for a huge American company. And they said, okay, we want you to come and test the product. And I said, yeah, yeah. And then they gave me these 6 scripts. And I said, but these 6 scripts suck. They're just like plain old batch files that we used years ago. They don't do anything. And they said, yeah, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to do like exploit tools, or rewritten Mimikatz and Parasploit and like all that stuff. And they said, nah, we know that that's going to flag up.
Right.
Like, of course, you know, if that doesn't flag up, your tool is useless. We want to see what happens when we've a low-level admin, like this company has 300,000 people in it. We've a low-level admin poking around things, using System32 files, you know, scheduling commands, deleting the schedule command, mapping drives, copying stuff, doing all that kind of stuff. So we went and ran about 20 minutes of scripts. And at the end of it, ATP showed nothing.
Huh.
And they were really disappointed. And I was disappointed. And then 10 minutes later, we get an alert saying, we can see low-level reconnaissance. And it's low-level reconnaissance because it's just using tools that you would find in System32.
Right.
And it hasn't gone across the attack chain. But it showed every single script and everything that we'd done. And when I was talking to the ATP threat intelligence team, they explained to me, well, what's happening is the machine learning is looking at this feed from this machine and they see it hasn't gone across the attack chain, but it's dubious. And so it took a little bit extra to come up, but there it is.
Right. But the next steps would be moving along the attack chain. But right now it's doing the reconnaissance. What cert tools do I have available to me within this VM? Like what do I have ingredient wise to begin an attack? So it's already watching at a fairly early stage.
100%. And then like, so we reviewed this with the customer and the ATP team. And they said, like, in script 5, you've mapped a drive and copied stuff to a web server. And they said, yeah. And I'm like, okay, so where'd you get the username and password?
Right.
And like, oh, well, it's mine. I was like, well, you're a pretty dumb attacker to be using your own username and password. Come on. And the customer was like, yeah, okay, that doesn't sound very smart. So they were like, you know, really, what should be happening here is we should see something that's attacking the hash on the machine.
Right.
We should see something like Mimikatz getting in onto the machine and attacking the machine. The next logical step that I take this with customers is Microsoft talk about Windows 10, most secure operating system ever. And then I say, well, it can be, because almost every Windows 10 that I see is deployed as a Windows 7. It just has Windows 10 on it.
Right.
And what I mean by that is all they've done is suck Windows 10 into Config Manager and they're pushing it out.
Yep.
Windows 10 has a whole bunch of features that really should be deployed to make it safe. And so when I, like you hinted at that at the start, when I talk to people and I say, let's go and make Windows 10 safe, and just those features are things like right from the start, changing the BIOS to UEFI, so that enabling safe boot,
yep.
which means that we can launch early launch anti-malware, and then using at the bare minimum credential guard, and if you could use device guard.
Right.
And obviously BitLocker, antivirus, ATP, you know, I personally think get the Microsoft monitoring agent and have it going open to log analytics. But like if you sit down with a big company and you say, so what's credential guard? And you say, okay, you move, you know, the local security authority subsystem over to a small bit of a partition. And they say, well, what do I need for that? You know, well, obviously like you need like a modern machine, ideally like a TPM chip 2, etc. And they're like, well, that's not our enterprise. Well, then the next obvious step is, well, if we can't secure all of the people out there easily, could we secure your IT team? And the answer to that is yes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm working with a reasonably big org, about 25,000 people. There's 200 people in IT. And I said, well, could we build this secure lockdown laptop for IT? And they said, well, yeah, we could do that effort. And then they said, well, what's the next thing we could do to like give somebody a pain in the ass coming in here? And I was like, well, the next thing you could do is we could, you know, implement privileged identity management, which, you know, is basically Microsoft's just-in-time administration. I just get access to a group when I need it.
Right. Yeah. The GEA.
Yeah. In Azure, that's a really easy thing to do. To get access to Azure groups, that's a really easy thing to do. You know, PIM just requires one of the very flash licenses or just Azure Active Directory P2, which is not expensive. You know, it's a couple of bucks a month of an upgrade from, you know, your standard Azure license. So with privileged identity management, you get to configure the amount of time somebody can be in a group. You can make them MFA to get on. You can say they have to have a ticket. You can say everybody in the group gets an email. All right. So one of the things that I would recommend, like one of my key tips is do not use your standard Office 365 account as a global admin. Go and, you know, set up admin accounts, but also mail enable them. I mail enable them and I create a forward. And so what I know is if somebody elevates their account to global admin, everybody in the group gets an email and it just gets forwarded to your standard email account.
Right. And I like that from the point of view of, and in general, like these granularized administrator accounts that all have specific skills or specific rights in them so that you're uncomfortable while you're using that account. You don't just hang out in that account. You get in, you do your thing, and you get out because you are constantly scrutinized. Everything is logged. Like that's the point of those admin accounts. They're not for hanging around in.
100%. And the other thing about it is, for me, is the single greatest target in the world is an admin.
These days, definitely. Yeah.
And like the amount of people who I speak to, who their admins respond to phishing attacks. To company originated phishing attacks.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm working with an aviation company in upstate New York. And they get a security team that come in and have a really nice phishing website. They have spent a couple of emails saying it's coming in. You just have to update your username and password. And a couple of the admins have updated their username and password.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and it's just like, you know, it's pretty serious.
Yeah, no, it's, and it just shows there's still a vulnerability. You know, a few weeks ago, we did a show with Aaron Margolis talking about the security guidance blog. You talk about Win 10 being used as Win 7. I mean, that whole blog site is just about, here is the new security baseline, like how you can lock a machine down. I just don't know that enough people even know about it.
I agree. The last show I listened to was your reverse DSC.
Oh, yes.
And I was like, the thing that I sometimes feel is, I mean, I was just reading something on LinkedIn today about the new breaches that are out today. You know, one of the Cisco security devices has a massive hole in it. I'm talking to you on a Lenovo 910 Glass, my favorite laptop in the world.
Right.
The fingerprint reader has just got a vulnerability into it.
Oh, no.
You know, you're just like, there's a feeling of the sky is falling.
Yeah.
And what I say to people is this feeling that the sky is falling is like, it is falling. But the problem is that you don't have the facilities to assume breach. You know, you don't have the facilities and the technology to say people are going to get in. And when they are in, what are you going to do?
Well, when do you know that they're in?
Yeah.
You know, question number one. And Paul, give me 1 second here just for this very important message. This episode of Run As is brought to you by SQL Intersection. 8 full-day workshops and over 40 technology-focused sessions make SQL Intersection a unique source of the best information around SQL Server from real-world consultants and members of the SQL Server team. You'll learn proven problem-solving techniques and technologies you can implement immediately, as well as learn about the future of SQL Server. Get answers to performance monitoring, troubleshooting, designing for scale and performance, cloud, as well as new features in SQL Server 2016 and 2017. It's time to determine your migration strategy, and SQL Intersection is the place to figure out the best way to do it. Come to SQL Intersection at the Swan Hotel in Orlando, March 25th to 28th. Use code RUNAS to get your discount on your registration at SQLIntersection.com, and we'll see you there. And you're listening to Run As Radio. This is your host, Richard Campbell, here with Paul Keeley. We're talking about breach detection, which I think is a great problem. How many times do you see in the post-event evaluation saying, this breach actually happened 9 months ago, and we only detected it a few weeks ago?
Yeah, I mean, like, here's the thing that kind of makes me sad, is when you sit down with people and you say, Microsoft have an incredible tool set to deal with this. And really that tool set is M365 E5, like it's the full E5 stack.
Right.
Which would allow you to have, I mean, you need Windows 10 Enterprise. You can't lock down, in my opinion, you can't lock down Windows 10 to an enterprise grade.
Sure.
With the other stuff. Like you need that in place. You need Windows Defender ATP. The three things that I think are like the baseline, you have to have ATA on-prem, which is pretty soon not going to be on-prem. You have to have Windows Defender ATP and Office 365 ATP. And those three, I was recently with a customer and they said, oh, we've put in Office 365 ATP and we're thinking of going Windows Defender ATP. And I said, now, where in your design covers the integration in the two products? And they were like, what's the integration in the two products? And I said, well, did you know that if I send you 20,000 people in your org and someone gets an email and there's an attachment and it's got through the detonation chamber, the type of attachment they'll send now is something that has a tiny payload. It connects with a HTTPS connection.
Yeah.
So it's hard for your firewall to inspect it, download a package, and then it's the behavior of that file and its parent process that Windows Defender ATP is looking at.
Right.
So it's able to track back that, hey, you let in a file. It's after doing this, and here's the origin, and it came from Office 365. And then instantly, because of the connections, it can go straight back out to your tenant and say, scan my tenant instantly for this file hash. Who has it? You know, and then it can then go and pull that out of your tenant. And then it looked at the industry vertical that you set up when you put in Windows Defender ATP, and it goes through that industry vertical and looks for that file hash, and then through the rest of Office 365. So it's killer, isn't it?
Yeah.
When someone explains it to you, you're like, whoa.
But it also speaks to, again, this is the power of this public cloud model where we have all this interconnection, so that Microsoft has that catbird seat of seeing exploits from different organizations at different times and be able to lock down and catch up with them quickly. I've proposed a while ago that Microsoft's going to get to a place with the cloud where they're not going to stop breaches. They're just going to honeypot them. They're going to allow the hackers to waste as much time as they want, never being able to get through. Like, I was always a big believer in the three strikes you're out login policy. But on the third strike, I don't say you can't log in anymore. I just don't look at your password anymore. Spend as much time as you like. Knock yourself out.
Yeah.
And I have to wonder if at some point they're going to do something matrixy. There's going to be a little glitch. So you breach into a VM and it figures out that you breached into the VM. It doesn't kick you out. What it does is simply make a copy of that VM and put it in a place where it can't hurt anybody and let you waste all the time you like on it.
I mean, they have the capabilities to do it now.
Sure. But the main thing here is I want to make hacking really expensive. Telling people no is inexpensive, right? Oh, good. Now I can move on to the next thing. But to absorb their resources, just to churn through stuff that will never succeed.
That's such a fantastic idea. The reason why, in my opinion, hacking is working so well is because I watched a TED Talk who somebody was talking about digital fluency. And somebody said, you know, because you can swipe your finger across a tablet doesn't mean you're digitally native. You know, they gave a bunch of explanations as to how thick people are with IT.
Sure.
And one of the challenges that I really feel is that people click and open and hit next, next, next. And I watch it in IT, you know, because very often I'm doing Skype for Business calls to people and I'm saying, yeah, click there. And people are firing through with the mouse. I'm like, whoa, whoa, no, I didn't say there. Just, you know, back a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
And so what I guess would like people to think about is when they go to something and they're going to click, you know, in their general IT admin stuff, just make sure that what you're doing is the right thing. And then take that forward into your, you know, what happens with your email? What happens with your voice calls? You know, how is this done? So I was working with a customer who had been breached. So first of all, they were breached. And I said to them, what did you do afterwards? And they said, oh, the breach came in from Nigeria. So we've blocked the Nigerian country's IPs in our system. I said, have you ever watched Netflix from France? And they're like, no. And I was like, well, it sucks.
Yeah.
So do you think my IP shows up in France or Virginia? And they're like, you know, getting a bit hot under the collar. And I'm like, you hardly think a geolocation means anything today. I mean, like, you can be, you know, there's sites that will set up VPNs that are active for 4 hours, drop, yeah, and onto a new IP in a new part of the country.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, you got to forget that. But when I was asking them about their attack, the attacker did enough surveillance on them that they found who their IT provider was, hacked their IT provider, and then sent people an email saying, we're just updating our intranet. Can you please log on? 10 people logged on. It didn't work. They thought nothing about it.
Sure.
And then the attackers opened their portal at office.com, set up a rule saying, when emails come in with this subject line, send them to your deleted items. And then they sent an email to everybody else in the company saying, please update this portal. And when people emailed them back saying with the subject line, hey, is this real? It got sent to your deleted items.
Right. So you never saw it.
Isn't that a beauty?
Beautiful. What a move.
What an absolute beauty of a move. And it's this type of somebody using fairly low tech scenario to get in and severely breach people and gain usernames and passwords. And that's the name of the game. We log on to systems with usernames and passwords. If I can get your username and password, it's game over.
Yeah. And it's still not a good enough security system. I guess that's the big thing here. It's like, what do we got to do to get past that? Obviously, 2FA helps.
Yeah. So 2FA helps. But for me, I remember at Ignite a couple of years ago, Brad Anderson was demoing Azure Identity Protection. So for people who don't know it, it's your Azure Active Directory account going through ML and it looks at risk scores based on who you are. So I have a demo called the Secure Information Worker. And when I go into companies, I say, open a portal and they log in and they go on username and password and they get in. And I said, so you had a username and password combination probably in Kerberos, probably in AD. That was the dev cycle started on that 20 years ago.
Right.
And I said, now I want to go access the portal. Now watch this. So my Windows 10 machine boots up. I log in. And when I log into the box, the remote boot at a station server service picks up that my machine booted healthily. So far, it looks good. Then I try and access the site. And when I access the site, there's conditional access on it. It's looking at the risk score of my user login. It's looking at if my device is compliant from Intune. It's looking if it's Azure AD joined. And then it will decide yes or no to get me onto the system or to MFA me.
And it's got more to do with, is this normal, right? It's not that you have to be domain joined. It's that normally you do log in with a domain joined machine. So when you don't, that's unusual. That'll raise your threat score.
Yeah, absolutely. And so then I talked to another customer recently, and they can't fail their security test, but they failed their security test. And I said, you know, what happened? And they said, oh, we sent out the scamming email. Somebody opened it on their iPhone. And I said, well, what was the big deal about that? And he said, well, you know, they were sitting at home, and on all our firewalls inside the building, we had set up rules to block against this. And I said, so what have you learned from that? And he said, well, you know, that the perimeter is not my firewall anymore. Yeah. It's certainly outside.
That's a Brad Anderson line, right? The perimeter is now identity. It's not a firewall.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the next demo I showed him was, I said, okay, look, I have a corporate account for Box, and I am provisioning that through Azure Active Directory, meaning that if I log into Box and I have no Box account, but have an Azure AD account, my Box settings will be auto-provisioned. I'll get single sign-on, I'll get into the Box. And then I'll take a document that has been protected with Azure Identity Protection. I'll drop it into Dropbox, and then I'll email it to somebody at Gmail. And Cloud App Security will see what's happening, will see me taking it, and will grab it and yank it out before it goes to Gmail.
Nice.
And when he saw that, he was like, okay, I am starting to understand, you know, where all this fits together and what's the purpose to it. And really what I would say to people is, when you're going to evaluate this security stack, please don't look at one product. Please don't look at Intune and say, oh, compared to AirWatch, it's not as good.
Right.
I mean, for MDM, it's a better thing. For mobile application management, forget it. More people that I speak to are interested in how we manage the application than the device. And like, this is an important point. So recently I was saying to somebody, if you want to use MAM, you know, really you need Intune. And they were like, no, you don't need Intune. I can use something else. Like I can use AirWatch. And I was like, yeah, but it's AirWatch with an Intune license. And they said, no, it's not. I said, okay, let me pose you a question. You want to stop your son accessing Gmail. What would you do? It's like, well, I could set up a filter in the home, you know, internet router. I was like, okay. And he has an iPhone or an Android. Well, I can put parental controls in that. I was like, okay. And then he goes into school and asks his best friend for his phone. Well, now he's on Gmail. I was like, well, the only way you can stop him accessing Gmail is to ask Google to do it.
Right.
Like, if you want to stop somebody accessing an application, it's the person who provides the API that needs to stop that.
Sure.
So if your services are things like Office 365 and, you know, Microsoft Teams and SharePoint Online, etc., if you want to stop people accessing that, the person who can stop them doing that is Microsoft. And they can license that to other people, so you're buying a, you know, second license. But the person who can stop access to that at the application layer is Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
It's nobody else.
Yeah.
And so understanding that, getting access to these really important things through your identity, that needs to have a risk score. So Microsoft are always talking about the risk score. And when you look at something like Cloud App Security and you look at an individual and what they're doing, it shows you your risk score.
Nice.
It comes in and it says, hey, look, here's what's going on. So after one of the big four got breached with this MFA switched off, one of the Microsoft account teams that we work with came to us and said, okay, show us how we find this. So I was like, yeah, sure. You know, we just go to the portal. there's nowhere on the portal that shows me that somebody has switched off MFA.
Mm.
I can see who has MFA on or off by looking at the portal. But like, you know, okay, I have 125,000 users in it. You know, I mean, that's not feasible. So there's a PowerShell command that will look for strong authentication. That's the value. It's not called MFA at all. And so all we did was we got the PowerShell script and put it into Azure Automation. And then we said, run and export the details into OMS, into Log Analytics. So we then just, you know, have a tile that says, here are global admins that don't have MFA enabled. And then when we did this for a customer, he said, so this is perfect. Then I have to go to securescore.office.com and see my secure score. Can you pull that? He's like, yeah, sure. So we connected to the API and stuck in the secure score. And then he said, okay, can you take that from Cloud App? And I was like, yep. So we can take it from Cloud App and then connect to Azure AD. And so in one place, you can type in a user, like a global admin, see do they have MFA enabled, and then compare things like what's your current secure score standard and what's your Cloud App security score. And very quickly, you can start to mesh a graph of deeper understanding into the knowledge that's currently in a number of portals.
It still seems like a lot of moving parts, Paul. Like, yeah. I've been grabbing links from the products, as you've been mentioning them, from the Intelligent Security Graph on down. It just seems like there's so many pieces. It's got to be very challenging for folks to pull all those bits together.
So that's the one bit I'll grant you. Like, I am a fanboy for this suite.
Yeah, and you also do it for a living. Like, you've got all these different products and their roles in your head, but you may be the only one.
So here's what I'll say is the surprising place that you can join them all through URIs is into Log Analytics. You just need to know a little bit about it. But like, you need to go to one portal for Windows Defender ATP. You need to go to Office 365 to get in and examine what's happening there.
Right.
Go to securescore.office.com. You need to go to your cloud app. There's an awful lot of moving parts.
Yep.
And the reason for that is because in lots of organizations, there'd be different teams. So the first reason is the maturity of the system.
Right.
Microsoft are literally building this like crazy.
Yep. And you're definitely seeing these things are organized by the product team that's building them.
But they are ultimately going to build a unified console that's going to pull all this in together. I guess the challenge has been the uptake in licensing, you know, getting people to cough up for, you know, this brand new license, the M365E5 is right. The killer license. If you're an IT person, and you're saying, what should I look for? I mean, truly, this is, you know, it's the one to go for. It's just protection every single way. And the approach that I've taken for lots of companies is I've said, let's go and build a secure workstation for the C team, for your C-suite and your directors. You give them a secure workstation, you let them work for it for a week.
I like that. I like that you start with the admins and get them doing it.
Yeah.
Then push it up to the senior management.
Right. So the response I'm looking for senior management is, what are you guys in here for? You gave me this laptop. I'm paying you bucks. I don't see any change.
Right. Perfect.
We nailed it. And then I say, okay, so now let me show you what you've actually been working with. They can see a super lockdown laptop. They can see it being super safe. They can see all these cloud scores. And when they see that and they experience and they feel it, they go, that is impressive stuff.
I love the idea that you could give those C-level guys some confidence that your security team is on top of it.
Yeah.
Because I think most of them just live in fear. Like, they don't want to know. They're almost head down about it.
Yeah. So I think living in fear is fine if you are in North Korea. If you're in the developed world, I just don't think we can stick our heads in the sand and hope for the best anymore.
Yeah, I totally agree. The same way I feel good when my credit card company calls me to say, hey, was this you on a transaction? I love that because it just means they are watching and that was an unusual transaction. And so you didn't stop it, but you are aware of it. That to me is a confidence builder. You've just articulated a way for me as an InfoSec guy to give my boss's boss that same sense of confidence.
Yeah. The one comment about all of this that has made me nervous recently, I listen to Sam Harris's podcast all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever listen to him, but he recently was interviewing a guy called Lawrence Krauss. He's one of the scientists that evaluates the doomsday clock, you know, how right. close mankind is to elimination. And so he was saying that when he has to press confirm 15 times in a self-service checkout to buy a tin of beans and a bottle of ketchup, and the person who triggered the alarm in Hawaii to say, there's an intercontinental ballistic missile coming, this is not a joke.
Right.
He just had one button to press.
I think it was two clicks, but yeah.
Okay, two clicks. a right and left click.
Yeah.
Confirm, yes, and then go for dinner.
Something like that, yeah.
We're reaching a point where half of our technology is becoming super advanced, super technical, you know, AI, ML driven, data lakes powered, all this kind of stuff. Like, I'm still talking to people who have this nonsense in their environment. And yeah. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, you gotta stop. You know, what are you doing?
You know, there comes a time when somebody has to grab hold of an organization. I mean, I still have people saying our corporate standard is 2008 or two.
Yeah.
And I gag.
It's 10 years ago.
I'm like, what? And why?
Yeah.
You know, we haven't done training yet. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah. It's crazy. Paul, really fun to talk to you. Lots of insight. And the book, Cloud Security for the C-Level.
Yeah.
Include a link to it. It sounds like absolutely worth the read. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, I really appreciate your time, Richard.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.